Okay, welcome back. Hope you had a good break. I'm going to tag just a little bit more on what we just left and then go right into the next lesson after that. The reason why I have these visuals is because sometimes people are very visual and sometimes a picture means a lot more than just words. So I'm going to, we've already talked about this pretty much, but I'm just going to do it as a reminder. Education sometimes is about reminding, so there you go. When a boy is born, he's born by God with as male, gender. That is genetic, by the way. There is a male gene. There are female genes as well, all right? So what happens in early childhood, now, this can get very complicated, but again, I'm being very simplistic. But these are the kinds of things that in childhood these boys experience. Loss of father and three A's, overly tied to mother in some cases. The main thing is the shamed male self or the peer shame, bullying, and sometimes emotional abandonment, and frankly, just pain. But little boys, little girls, if they have similar issues, but on the other side, who can take that much? Do you know any little boys that can, at 5 years of age, after all these issues, can look up one day and go, I think I might become a homosexual if I don't work this stuff out. I've got to address these issues with myself because I don't feel good about myself. Who does that sound like? An adult. Kids can't do it, and that's why these defense mechanisms start occurring, these pleasure principles. It's a way that people, kids and adults, learn automatically to deal with issues and pleasurize them so they don't have to face what the rough stuff is down below. We all do that to some extent, by the way. All right. So these things begin to happen to them, these defense mechanisms. It's all overlaid on their personalities. It all tends to just cover up what's really going on. Disowned parts of themselves, defensive detachment. And then finally, and it happens a lot of times with people in churches. They tend to get I kind of call it sometimes a Sunday morning, happy, good, I'm fine self. You know, it's that, oh, he's doing so great. And in a lot of cases, I'm just telling you, there's a lot more stuff going under the bridge. And this is kind of what he presents at. This is why so many guys, it's simplistic to say so, but I'll say it. This is why so many guys look so happy. I'm out and proud. It's great. And because they're fighting for a cause, and they there's some truth to them finally being authentic with each other instead of hiding their parts of their real selves. There's some truth to that. But the deeper underlying story that they're not in touch with usually are all these issues. So that's where my job comes in as therapist. And I move into that kid or that adult. And then we start breaking away through emotional processes. We start breaking away all this stuff. And when things break through, where does it send them back into? So this is why therapy, just so you know, I won't spend an immense amount of time on therapy, but just so you know, because I think you need to know, because change is possible. That's where we're heading as well. Change is possible because when you break away all those things and finally get down to where the truth really is, what is that kid or that grown man going to feel and have to deal with? All that. And the short story is, when he really feels and deals with all this, and there's pain and anger and just shame-based, I'm disgusting kind of belief systems that he's lived his life, all his life, well, when those things are healed, sometimes through spiritual things that he experiences, but a lot of times just because he's facing and he's sitting across from a guy, hopefully, who's non-judgmental and who will let him just spill it, there's an automatic survival mechanism in each of us that searches for what we know will be truthful, what will feel most natural to us. And when he finally goes through all that stuff and resolves it, sometimes it takes a short time, sometimes it takes a very long time. What is he works through that, and that's all gone. The grief comes up, but the assertive state comes up, the authentic state. Instead of encumbered by all this stuff, he takes a breath. Oh, I feel better. And he's gone down into the depths, kind of like Psalms, David, down into the depths and come up again. And he feels better because he's worked through all those dark things, long story short. And now he's back to his growing male identity. That's how change is possible. When the guy comes up out of these processes, little by little, or maybe even over a period of years, he removes the mechanism, because he's doing his work, he removes the emotional mechanism that's creating the homosexual feelings. That's why homosexual feelings automatically lessen or dissipate entirely. I see it in my office every week. And wouldn't you know it, those emotional experiences are exactly what the world is trying to tell you doesn't exist. Now, can a person still have spiritual conversion experiences and that's really the main thing in his life and not necessarily deal with these issues? Yeah, that's right. You know, ultimately, the most important thing, obviously, is to get in a relationship with God. So I'm not telling you that therapy trumps God. Not at all. But therapy, the kind of therapy I do, just so happens to complement sound biblical principles as well. So in the end, God is the great healer. Certain in the sense of sinfulness, and you've got a person of the faith, then a lot of this stuff will sometimes come up. Sometimes it'll remain hidden. But the point is that emotional change isn't a mandate. It's not you don't have to point to a gay guy and say, you know, after you're converted, you really need to change your feelings. No. Yeah, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying there is a way out, not just behaviorally and spiritually, but if you talk about the Bible talks about giving a cup of cold water. If you talk about a cup of cold water to a thirsty man who actually has the experience of, wow, I'm not even sexually attracted to this guy. It feels like a lot. It's still there, but it's a lot less. And some guys say after a while, I have no interest in this guy at all anymore. Wow. Some guys say, look up. Three guys have looked up to me over the years and said something specific. I'll never forget like this. They say, wow, David, this being my own male thing, in my own body, this feels a lot better than sex with guys. I wasn't soliciting their comments. They just come up with it. So I know two things if that happens. One, it's not inborn. There's another reason why you know it's not inborn. Because there's nothing I could do if it was inborn to change somebody's feelings. And number two, it's changeable. Even Kennedy, our United States Supreme Court, on his argument instituting gay marriage, based it all on what? Huh? He based it on immutability. If you want to read, this is great for Ty. If you want to just ask Ty, read his summation at the very end. He justifies gay marriage for one main reason, after he talks about the glories of marriage, and all people should have that opportunity. Sounds great, right? But in the end, you catch why he was able to do it in his mind. He says it's being homosexual is immutable. And what I'm telling you is something different. You don't have to believe me. You can just check it out for yourselves if you want. But I'm telling you, there's good news here. Not just salvation as we see it in Scripture, but there's good news in the sense of I really can affect my sexual feelings. Things really can at least move in the right direction. So I don't have a problem that much. Can you imagine a process or a relationship in which you're a part of that allows that person to emotionally transform so that, I mean, who wouldn't want some of their temptations in life to decrease? Do you guys know anybody that would not want their temptations that they tend to be suspect, that tend to come up for them? Would you not want that to be less of a struggle? Well, there is a way. That's one of the reasons I'm here to tell you. So, all right. And we've already done this. So all these things, in essence, get relieved. All right. So on to the next thing. LGBT issues are overtaking our country and the churches. What on earth do we do? Now, we've talked about some of that already because some of this is kind of mixed together. But let's just go through some of this, and I won't get stuck on everything here for this next lesson, but you may also have some questions because now it's going to start getting more a little bit more practical, and you may have some questions going on. You should know some things first. Approximately 2.5% of Americans identify as homosexual. Somewhere between 1 and 3% is the best estimation. The LGBT folks want us to believe that there's 10%. It's not provable in the research. The research just isn't there. Where did the LGBT movement come from? Well, I could spend an hour or two on the history of that. But you should know that in 1972, the American Psychiatric Association, not because they did research, but because they just changed their minds with LGBT activist pressure, in 1972 to take homosexuality out of the diagnostic manual for disorders. Now, I think it's probably a good idea to not shame people, and probably to take it out of the diagnostic manual wasn't so bad. But what the message was of that movement was, and that moment in time, was that homosexuality is inborn, so it's not a disorder. That's what the real argument was, even though it wasn't expressly stated. Okay, already said that. We don't have time to go into the 80s. Maybe some of you know about all that already. But the sexual diseases and the violence and emotional problems of LGBT folks, not cutting them down, I'm just saying look at the statistics, look at the research that actually, it's available on the internet for everyone. You can see it for yourself. The incidence of these things, the percentages go way up, all right? I think it's because it just stands to reason. If I'm correct that there are emotional issues that are unresolved from childhood, well, you're going to have a lot more acting out. You're going to have a lot more risky behaviors because people really aren't dealing with their real issues. Okay, and then just to name a few, I probably don't even have to mention this, but after the 60s, when it was the free-for-all love movement, basically, movies came forward, TV, internet, the universities. I mean, I could talk all day about how the education system has been just gone over into liberalism and subjectivism instead of objectivism. There's really no reality at all, so we're all just doing the best we can, and that's just marvelous. Let's all be kind together and just allow everything. That's really what the liberals pretty much say. Okay? Elected officials, one only needs to point to our past President Obama to what a great opportunity he had to be the first black president of the United States. Marvelous opportunity. And look at the things he did in terms of sexuality and what he approved and what he pushed. Again, a sea change of political elected officials and the judges. You know, I've named one already, the United States Supreme Court Justice Kennedy. All this stuff has been this swirling mass of liberal relativism and sexual, like the Bible says. I mean, the Bible's not mocked. You know, lust of the flesh, I mean, it kind of hits the nail on the head. So the mind of man tends to make up the dynamics and the specific things about how that's done. It's the great deception. It's the great lie that people look for and they find, but that we know because we're familiar with, we know Scripture and what the real stories are. We know that it's all a big deception. Maybe you can call it delusion. Maybe you can call it a mistake. But that's what's going on. This tide, this wave of influences that are affecting every facet of our country. And so, parents, it's a different world. You got to be prepared. Grandparents, you got to be prepared. The LGBT activists are in your schools all over the place. And the number one thing they want is to be accepted for who they believe they are because they were born that way. And to believe anything else would be anathema. It's coming. It's already here. Were you going to ask a question? Oh, yeah.
When the movement was taken out of the ESM,
right.
He admitted there was no scientific basis for it. It was just purely a moral conclusion, no different from any moral conclusion from a preacher or a rabbi. I wrote it up in a little law journal, which nobody paid attention to.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was mentioning that he knew of, and I know of him, the guys who were there in 1972. And he was talking about where some of them admitted it, that they just changed their minds because of pressure. It wasn't because of research. And it started the ball rolling. Okay. That's kind of... So, in terms of what do we do about it now in this section, and in terms of what you need to know in a more political way, I say political, it's not that you have to be an activist, but the people in your schools will be on board with this. That's why I'm saying it today. This is what they will come at you with and will claim you're a self-righteous right-wing bigot unless you believe this. So It's the born that way theory. It's all about love. And so let me ask you another question. Is there a civil right for being gay? We went through the 60s. Wonderful movement in some ways, at least very much, is in terms of trying to render the last 200 years of the awful things that were done to African Americans. Is that the same argument? Does that hold water? Civil rights? This is what you're going to hear everywhere you go. It's, hey, just like the 60s with the blacks and all this, and now we're doing exactly the same thing. What's the answer to that? What's that? Yeah, but what if I'm born that way? Okay. So there's a lot of arguments that are good, actually. But the bottom line is you take them back to the born that way theory. You'll have people who scream and yell at you, or at least maybe be strong with you and say, no, no, this is a civil right. It has to be. But if you're not talking about the research that denies born that way theory, or if you're not talking about scripture that pretty much proves that it can't be created by God, you're going to be talking up here about all these things and you'll never understand each other. You're going to be born left and right, tempers flaring, all this stuff, tragic feelings, all this stuff. So this is why I'm advising people, mainly, not that you can't talk about all that stuff, but I'm recommending that if you get in these conversations, always take them back to born that way theory, because every single thing will come down to that. You'll be in conversations for 10 or 15 minutes maybe, and in the end they'll say, well, I know I was born this way. So why not go to the foundation of the house? Go to the foundation of the house. If you will, you don't have to be belligerent about it. Not at all. In fact, you can be very loving. But if you insist on going back to, well, yeah, I hear you, Sam, but, the problem is this is not an inborn thing. And if you keep repeating that and keep repeating, the research or scripture, it's rightly divided, then that keeps them on the ground floor. That's the one place they don't want to go because they don't have any. In the end, if you've got a dogmatic person, in the end, they'll go, well, you're allowed to believe what you believe, and I'm allowed to believe what I believe. And, you know, and what they're really telling you is, I was born this way. It's born that way argument. This is where, actually, dealing with these issues, when you get into problems of discussion, not with guys who are trying to change, I'm saying with activists and people who don't understand, who will call you self-righteous, this is when it gets actually really simple. Believe it or not, it's actually very simple. If you take it down to born that way theory, a lot of people think they have to. Some civil rights. You don't have to be. I know it's hard when people are yelling at you or being snide with you. I get it. But if you're coming from love and truth, which is our hallmarks here this weekend, you're not going to give up the truth. You're going to take them back to, is born that way theory correct? You just keep taking them back. Keep taking them back. In fact, I've told some people in some conversations who are getting involved in all the other, what they believe are relevant points, and they are. I'm not saying the other points aren't very relevant. They are very relevant. But they don't matter if you haven't really solved this question. So I always take people back to born that way theory. I'm not saying I'm being dogmatic with them. I'm just saying, in a sense, I don't let them go farther. I always take the conversation back because that's where truth lies. Does that make sense? It's actually it doesn't have to be so complicated. In other words, it's a tool to just take them back. Okay. The only thing I'm going to point out about this, there's actually a lot of slides. There's a lot more slides than I'm presenting today, but I'm not going to go on these slides. But what I'm going to give you is the website called voicesofchange.net. Now, I'll say right now, for those of you who are interested in hearing or at least reviewing the information that I'm presenting this whole weekend, if you just email me, I'll send you the PowerPoint program so you can have this. All right? Just let me know. Happy to give that to you. I'm not going to charge you. So, but one of these things that I have on here are testimonies of real change that were written by people themselves. This is what the media doesn't want you to know. And so I'm not going to go through these stories, even though they are heartbreaking and victorious at the same time. If you're interested, just go. You can go to this if you get the PowerPoint from me, or you can go to voicesofchange.net. And I think you'll be knocked out when you read what the horrific experiences of what these people went through, and then the how wonderful they felt when they, well, got through them. Okay? That's a fictitious name, by the way. Okay. Actually, hang on just a second. Yeah. So, let's see how much. Yeah, actually, I think it's working out pretty well with our schedule. So I wanted to, that's actually a lot about how to, or at least some verbiage on how to interact and use logic, but also compassion. I'm going to stop for a few minutes and ask you guys if you need some help with specific scenarios, maybe that you're wondering that may happen, or maybe some of you have come up against these in specifics. And I'm all about practicality, so applying what we learn. I don't want this to be some esoteric thing that, oh, that's great, and go and never think about it anymore. This is where it starts to get real practical. So if you have any scenarios that you're wondering how on earth to address, I'm all ears. And who knows, we might be even role-played a little bit. And let's discover together how to actually deal with these things in your relationships or with people you come into contact with. Yeah. Where these issues are applied, actually. Okay.
I've worked many times, I get bombarded by, because they know I'm a Christian. So, our job, they normally have what they call it on what's one. That they say if you speak aloud about issues that will affect anybody else, right?
You take what?
It could be written up the onwards one.
Ah.
And the ground also be suspended. So many times guys would like ask you questions. Because there's a lot of homosexuality in our job.
Mm-hmm.
They even like about 10 years ago, they had a clause in the health. Year adults and a big program, and he said, you're a significant partner.
Mm-hmm.
So, a lot of people, who, young guys who were like having relationships and living home, thought it meant that they are living girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
So, they signed up and said, no, we're talking about same sex couples. So, that discussion came up.
Okay.
And so I said, and I started talking, spoken to people, because of what God added from the force. Just between a couple of guys, and they were saying, you tell me, all these guys, all these people, don't go to hell. So I had to be like, be careful who, when I talk to them, they'll go wrong, and all this stuff. How would you deal with it? In I'm saying these guys, but still, you got to be careful, because if somebody here, if you feel that your answer is too strong, like say, oh, please be biased.
Yeah.
So many times people like try to walk.
Right. Right. That's one of the greatest practical questions I've ever heard, and it comes up all the time. So I'm so glad you asked it. And I'm not here to tell you, by the way, that I'm some guru of knowing exactly what to tell you, exactly what you should do in every single minute. But I do have, as you know, some opinions on how to deal with things. So when that comes up for me, I know, because of my experience, I'm going to tone it down to just the basics. I'm going to make it really simple as much as possible. So that's the first principle. Keep it simple. And then I'm going to, if I feel it's necessary, I mean, there are some times where, let's face it, you just stand up for the truth. But on some of these gray areas, what I usually do is something like, I take it off of myself by saying it in words that sound sort of like, well, you know, there are some people, and is some research that shows this and this and this, all right? I don't know if you've ever thought about that, Jack. You know, does that interest you? You know, you're not, when you say it that way, you're asking them to consider something. You're not demanding anything of them. Does that make sense? So using words, that's what I would at least suggest at first, using words where it takes it off of you and just tell them your observations. Here's what I observed. Some guys believe this. I've heard that there's guys who, gay guys actually, who know they're not born that way, but they feel that that's what they want to do. You know, there's when you give them options, it makes it seem less like you're being that judgmental person who needs to be thrown out. Does that help you at all? Maybe not. So, okay. Right. Right. When they're right, and when they're being that specific, now you're talking about a religious or spiritual argument. Okay, I get that. So, but again, you can phrase it in a way like you just did, which I think is great. Yeah, you're taking it off it because it isn't about you. It is about God. So why wouldn't you phrase it that way? I'm just telling you, this is what God says about it. You could also do a little bit of the other way I just suggested, when you could say, you know, some people believe that the scriptures are interpreted this way. Some people believe the scriptures are interpreted that way. And you leave it there for them to think about, because it feels less dogmatic to them. Now, they still may ball you out, but there's less of a chance, because what you're doing in that, if you phrase it in those ways, or you're making yourself appear to be non-judgmental and open, instead of, this is the way it is. You know? Make sense? Okay. Yes, sir. I'm sorry, what? Okay. It was a gay guy or something? Okay, and you were talking about the nature of homosexuality, whether it's right or wrong or not? Okay. All right, so you tell me. How come that was actually a good thing to do? Right.
And everyone knows what I believe. This makes sense. So why?
Most people.
Yeah. Now, I understand that there's such a thing now. It's called the King's Bible, but I don't think that people like it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But I did say I believe the Bible because the Bible doesn't give any examples of same sex relationships. So why say this is what I believe, but I can tell you that this is what the Bible believes?
Yeah. I think that's terrific. You've thrown it off of your own authority and put it right to where who the authority is. It's about God. That's especially useful, I think, when you're talking to more of the activist kind of person or a person who's greatly offended, because what they will be, let's say they don't really have an interest in let's say they're just too convinced and you're not changing their mind at all. Okay. They're usually more interested, I think, in a lot of cases at least, in proving you wrong. They want to prove to themselves that you really are a righteous bigot. That's why they're saying those things. It would be different if somebody was going to the scripture and sitting down with you and you face to face, you discovered the scriptures together and there was a good faith effort and it was camaraderie and all that stuff. I kind of doubt that's going on in a lot of these conversations, just because of my experience, all right? If there is, great. But if that's what's going on, then it's really about their motive to accuse you of being horrible. And if you know that and you want to put the authority on God, that's why that would be a great response, I think. Well done. Yeah, Tammy? Yeah. Now I can if you want me to verbally give you these references, I will. But it is on the PowerPoint program, so you know what? I guess the church will just take ownership of the PowerPoint and the audio, right? Okay. So the church will have this resource. If you don't want anything from me, that's fine. But the church will have this resource, and those where to find those studies are in here. Okay, she was asking about, okay, well, where is the research? And I agree with you. This isn't a research weekend, or else I would put a lot more stats on the board. But what is on here are the places to find peer-reviewed research about what I'm saying. I don't want to come across as a guy that just speaks off the top of his head and expects you to believe everything I believe. So, yeah, it's a great question to ask for. Okay, where is it? Same thing scripturally, right? We've been asking today, where is it? Where is it in the Bible? Instead of just talk off the top of our heads. Let me go here first.
Yeah, and I'm maybe a little
I'm not sure your exact question.
What I'm asking is that research typically being accepted?
Yeah. especially throughout the last 10, 20 years, you've had a lot of research that's come out and said, we're all born gay. Wow. And it's peer-reviewed. And you go, and then when you check the resources and you check the people who have actually done the research, and you've checked their methods, which a layman person is not going to normally do, you see the faulty research that's called peer-reviewed research. That's why on one of these websites, it's NARTH.com. I'm a board member of NARTH. It's the National Association for Research and Therapy of Homosexuality. The Journal of Sexuality, Volumes 1 through 7, is one of those resources that it has a huge amount of research that is in direct opposition with some of the modern stuff, and it's peer-reviewed as well. So, you know, if you're a layman, unless you choose to do your own research, yeah, we're kind of hamstrung a little bit. You kind of believe who you believe. I get that. But I'm just telling you that if you looked at the peer-reviewed gay affirmative research, you're going to find faults. And here's some anecdotal evidence for you. This is actually a good point, I think, to keep in mind, remember. Because a lot of people will walk up to you and say, you know, the APA has proven that it's inborn. American Psychological and the Psychiatric Societies, they've all proven it's inborn. You know what the answer to that is? No. No, they haven't. And it's on their websites. And nobody's telling you. The APA says on their website, there is no gay gene. And here's something more for you. They say, actually, we think that there evidently is some genetic influence and some environmental influence about what causes homosexual feelings. In other words, they don't know. If they knew, and if it was proven beyond a shadow of a doubt, don't you think the news would be on 24/7 on our TVs and on Time magazine every month? They found it. It's not there. Especially the LGBT activists. Don't you think they would take advantage on a worldwide caucus, spend multi-millions of dollars making sure everybody, and then the civil rights issue kicks in? Well, they're doing it anyway. But we're taking them down to born that way theory. That's why that's so important. Yes, ma'am? You can spell. Great question.
Later, saying they were born that way.
Yes.
Do they take into consideration that, they were acquired characteristics? And do they ever take into consideration, as the first question, secondly,
they like the president.
Years ago, I'm 66 years old.
I'll take the second question first. I have the same view as you do, but I can't prove it. There's no research that can prove that. So we are all entitled to our opinions, and I think there's some basis for that. So I happen to just personally agree with you. I think that's at least an influence. There's some bit of truth to that. But I really can't go into, you know, certainty because, well, I'm just being honest with you. Now, the first question, I can answer. It's based on my experience as well, my practical experience, especially when I testify in front of state legislatures about these issues or trying to ban therapy for children for unwanted homosexual feelings, even if they're caused by pedophiles, if you can believe that. The basic answer to your first question is no. They won't entertain that. Do you know why? On TV, an LGBT activist will not even consider going there, won't even touch the subject of molestation. Take a guess. What if you heard that on CNN tonight at 7 o'clock? There is a proportional higher rate of sexual abuse in the gay community. That's right. But why could they not do that? There's two reasons I can think of. One is, if they ever, in public, even intimate that there may be something else going on than inborn theory, they'll lose their job in 24 hours. All the LGBT caucuses will be calling Washington, calling CNN. They'll lose their job in 24 hours. And the other reason is because I think it has a lot to do with what we talked about earlier, just a little while ago. When you're living a gay lifestyle and you believe fundamentally, absolutely something that's true, and this is true for anybody if they have absolute beliefs, you tend to resist or not want to deal with other viewpoints because it would shake your world. So their worlds are going to be rocked if they ever see or allow themselves to see possible evidence of something that's going on that could be the cause of all this stuff. So emotionally and politically, they won't do it, in my experience. Just so you know, I could have showed it to you today, but I'm not going to do it because it's just kind of awful. But there is a lot of film footage now that a activist friend of mine who took a risk, and he went to, I think on the West Coast, a lot of gay bars, and he's not gay himself, but he went to a lot of gay bars and just kind of the party nights and where everybody was kind of loose and drinking and whatever. We're talking about like 50 gay men. We're not talking about one in a blue moon. We're talking about a lot of gay men. He has them on film. I have it. And he asked them questions. You know, he's very personable. He's a nice guy and just wants to sincerely know. And he's walked up to many gay men and asked them that question. Well, so you were born gay, right? You will not believe what comes out of their mouth. Oh no, I'm not over exaggerating here. This is what you hear. It's kind of acted. They'll say, oh no, are you kidding? Yeah, my brother molested me when I was 5. Yeah, and I love being gay. Or they'll say, this is what's really horrible. They'll say, this handsome older man came at me when I was 15 and he molested me, and I didn't want it, but I got used to it. And you know what? No, I wasn't born gay, but I love being gay. So, hey, let's all just be gay. That's what you hear on camera, these solicited comments. So it's kind of eye-opening. Well, and I think most likely, because I see this so much, that's why I'm saying this, that sounds like a lot of defense mechanisms. People may not even believe that they were born that way, but because it's too dangerous emotionally to go to those inner causes, dealing with sexual abuse can be horrendous. And so it's part of it, it's not the whole story, but part of it is a resistance to go and deal with those issues. I think that's where lust of the flesh ideas come in. You know, when you have all this lust going on, it does a lot of hiding. We all do that. We all tend to do that. We all tend to take on some kind of, I'm not talking about sex necessarily, but pleasure principle that in reality hides a lot of loneliness or hides a lot of detachment or sexual issues sometimes, all of it. So that's why I'm talking to you today so boldly, because you're asking great questions and you want to know, and the church typically has not asked these kind of questions, so kudos to everybody here. I think it's great. Well done. Yes, sir. About what?
Recruitment.
Oh, yeah.
I get a sense, I think I know people personally who have gone through that. I don't think that's everyone. I think that's just a portion.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think I have observed recruiting and getting people into that mindset. And in fact, actually, among friends, close friends that were in the last few years, I was going to go to films with them and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. There is, and that's a great question, and if we had more time, I'd talk to you about more about the causes of actual pedophilia. Pedophilia, there's actually a lot of philias, but pedophilia is very young boys, sexually attracted to very young boys, all right? But I don't have time to go into the causes of that per se, but there's also ephebophilia, which is the sexual relationships with minor but older teens. And so it's all classified, but it's all kind of the same thing as well. But that's right. There is recruitment going on. Frankly, that really comes up. It's a hallmark of pedophilia. I have a client who just lately has been in therapy for months. I could just sense that he was dealing with actual sexual abuse by a man. Well, but I wasn't going to push it. You don't want to push things, all right? You want to just be open so that when they're ready to tell you, it comes up, because that's a better way to help them deal with these things. And so, sure enough, about a month ago, all these memories that were stored, repressed in his body about being, I almost can't even mention the words to you, but he was raped by his fourth grade teacher in the school closet. And the good news is, he's resolving all those issues. And that resolution of these deep issues, like I was saying before, he's becoming free even of the feelings. It's a process. But there is a lot of recruitment that goes on. It's usually clandestine or hidden. And unfortunately, there's a lot of it going on, or has been, in the Catholic Church. And that's why you've seen the movie Spotlight over the last 2 or 3 years. You guys see that movie? And about the Boston, you got it. If you want to know more about this, you can go see that or rent it. But it's shining a light on the recruitment that's going on. The stuff that's coming out of Hollywood, I'm kind of glad it's coming out, so to speak. You've been hearing about the men and women who've been sexually harassed or molested when they were young children. I assure you there's recruitment going on. Anything else? Yeah?
How would you, as a, because we're pushed by this community, and I've noticed they're going into schools now, and some schools are not playing any games anymore with boys and girls. They say, yeah, like, any role you can have, right? And then, so they're allowing boys to wear dresses and you know, and there's a school curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you, I see it's going to be difficult for children in the future, because how do you take a kid out of school? You know, and there's also society where I read the other day and I was like horrified, where somebody was trying to push a law in Congress to allow relationship between men and boys. They call it a man and boys society.
Yeah.
Right? And they push that law to legalize that. So
right.
I was like, wow.
Yeah, it's coming. That's why I'm saying this is a tidal wave you know, you're right. It's coming. And so we might be able to talk later if you want to get personally involved with how you can influence school districts or legislation, that's really another day for discussion. But if you want to know information on how you can battle that, you know, I can give you some pointers. So we've reached another time limit. Take 10 minutes, and we'll come back and finish up for today. All right? Thank you.